Stillman and Company is delivered by TriStar Moving. TriStar Movers with five-star service. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studios, streaming on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live. Presented by the law offices of Amanda Gentry, Caroline Fenton, Chase McCabe with you. We are joined now by Chad Withrow, Outkick 360. Chad, we are discussing what will go down as one of the most iconic days, I think, in college football history. And that was Nick Saban's comments about Jimbo Fisher. And then, of course, one of the best press conferences I think I've probably ever heard in my life. And that was Jimbo Fisher responding to Nick Saban. Chase and I were talking about what is the actual driving force behind both of these comments. They're about NIL, but I personally don't think it has anything to do with NIL. Your initial thoughts about the Saban-Jimbo fiasco.
Well, it's pretty clear that there's a lot of bad blood between the two. Way more so from Jimbo Fisher, I think, to Nick Saban as opposed to Saban to Fisher. But, you know, Jimbo Fisher and A&M beating Saban and beating them on the field, beating them in recruiting this past year, has clearly gotten under the skin of Nick Saban. And the thing that I kept coming back to with Nick Saban when he said it and my shock with it was, you know, the old phrase that snitches wind up in ditches, because Nick Saban's basically a rat in college football right now. You know, Philip Fulmer back in the day caught a lot of heat, still does, from Alabama fans. They got Alabama for some pretty blatant cheating at the time to the double turn state's witness against Alabama. It's an unwritten code, and this is sort of the honor amongst thieves type deal with college coaching, that everyone knows about everyone else and everyone's up to something. And you don't specifically call out any one program about something, especially if you're Nick Saban in Alabama, who it's been widely known for years, they're not getting every five-star just because of Nick Saban. There's other things going on there. Jeremy Pruitt didn't learn how to cheat when he got to Tennessee. I don't know how much Jeremy Pruitt learned in his entire life from an education standpoint, but he certainly didn't just start cheating when he got to Tennessee. So I think for Saban, of all people, to call out Jimbo Fisher that way clearly got Fisher emotional about it, got him angry. I think Fisher, you know, looked good at times, but also he sounds ridiculous when he goes on this holier-than-thou, oh, well, we do things the right way here, and we always, I mean, come on, give me a break. So part of that, you know, is very hypocritical from both guys in this. But I really just kept going back to this idea that, you know, Nick Saban's a rat at this point. And I think it's going to follow him for a while amongst coaches in college football that, you know, you just don't do that. You don't come right out and make an accusation like that against a program if you don't have proof, and you especially don't do it publicly.
Chad, I think calling him a rat is pretty good, considering he doesn't like rat poison. So that's pretty spot on.
That is true. Those two things could go hand in hand. But, Chad, I guess my follow-up question to you is, I am with you that I think it makes both coaches look a little petty and look pretty bad. But what effect do you think that could have potentially on recruits in the transfer portal process?
Well, I don't think it has any effect at all. You know, ultimately, look, I mean, you know, people are pointing out, well, you know, A&M finished with this record, and Alabama finished with this record, and now Alabama or A&M has a better recruiting class. And how did they do that? I mean, we've long seen that it's just not, you know, 1 + 2 = 3 when it comes to a team's record or success and their recruiting class the following year. We had Billy Lucci on from TexAgs.com, who is the man in College Station and knows everything. And he was saying, you know, look, a lot of this recruiting class was done based off a top five finish in 2020, where they really started with this class. They got, I think, 8 or 9 guys that were 4 or 5 stars from the city of Houston alone, which is 80 miles from Texas A&M. They had over 100 recruits at a game I was at in College Station when Texas A&M beat Alabama and the fans rushed the field. So most of the class was actually done from that. And not a lot, you know, after NIL and everything else, which, you know, look, I think that there was some NIL involved, obviously, with A&M, like there is a lot of places. But it was a good point. So I say all that to say Texas A&M is going to continue to recruit at a very high level because they have a national championship-winning head coach. They have a tradition-rich program. They're in a tradition. They're in a talent-rich state. They're going to spend money in NIL. And I think Alabama is going to continue to recruit at a very high level because they have a many times over national championship winning coach. They're in a talent-rich region, and they're going to spend money in NIL. Remember, Caroline, we're not that far removed from Nick Saban bragging about seven figures for his quarterback a year ago who had yet to start a game for Alabama. So what's the big difference if someone's getting over $1 million before they start a game at Alabama and him bragging about it as opposed to some high school four-star player getting $100,000 before he arrives on campus? I think it's not that big of a stretch when you look at both of those and where we are in college football right now.
We're talking to Chad Withrow, Outkick 360, here with us on Stillman & Company. I'm curious of your thoughts, Chad, on the NCAA basically relaxing their restrictions on college football conference championship games. We've now seen the Mountain West and the Pac-12 coming out saying they're going to get rid of divisions. I love this. I hate divisions in college football. I think the championship game should be the two best teams, no matter of the division. And, you know, I think that there's been, with the SEC especially, the divisions have messed up some rivalries. I'm just curious of your thoughts on what this does moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, I think, look, this is a no-brainer to me, Chase. I'm with you. It's great for the sport because anything that leads you to a more true champion is better for the sport. And I think the elimination of, you know, division, I'm not going to say they're arbitrary because there is geography involved, at least sure. some of them in college football. But, you know, it is pretty arbitrary when one side is good and one side is bad. And, oh, we have to have a winner from this division to play the winner from the good division in the championship game instead of coming together with a better system that produces at least there's no way to make it 100% across the board where everyone plays exactly the same teams and, you know, you've got a true sense of it. But you can get a lot closer to that with the elimination of divisions. And I think we're going to see that now with these conferences that have eliminated divisions. And I'm glad that the NCAA has made this rule. And we're only going to see more and more of this. I really think when Texas and Oklahoma get to the SEC, there will not be divisions anymore, much like we see with SEC basketball right now. But I think we're getting closer and closer to that in the SEC and in every conference. I look at the Big Ten and think about the East versus the West in the Big Ten and how much of a break you get if you're in the Big Ten West as opposed to Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan State in the Big Ten East. So I think you look at, you know, situations like that and it's easy to see this is going to be good for the sport in the long run.
Yeah, I think it will too. And I'm curious too of – as we move forward and if you get to where pretty much all the Power Fives ditch the divisions and you have the two best teams playing in the conference championship game with all this talk of playoff expansion, what does that do? Because I think it almost makes it harder for the committee because you're essentially going to have the two best teams competing for a conference championship, which could be viewed as a playoff type game. And that could make the seeding maybe a little tougher.
Yeah, I think it muddies the water for the conferences that, you know, we all basically determine are the best conferences. And so what I mean by that is typically, and we've seen it in recent years, it's the SEC, then it's the Big Ten, and then it's everyone else. I mean, the ACC's had a couple of flashes here and there. We've seen the Big 12 do some things, but it's really going to come down to, let's say it's a two-game tournament. You know, you eliminate a regular season game and there's a Final Four in the SEC or the Big Ten, and you get these sort of round-robin play-in games, but they're not really play-in games because if you expand the playoffs, you're still going to be taking more teams from the SEC and the Big Ten, who are the two powerhouse conferences. So it is going to be interesting when you get more of a true champion from the conferences, but I don't know how it's going to shake out in terms of expanding playoffs and who's going to get in from those power conferences. Now, in the lesser ones, or at least the ones that are lesser right now, you know, Pac-12, maybe the Big 12. Yeah, I think it will feel a lot more like a play-in game, but it basically is now. It's either a play-in game in those conferences or they have no shot, even the winner of the championship, to get into the playoffs.
Chad Withrow is with us, Outkick 360. Chad, last one for you on the college football front. And reference to the Jimbo Fisher, Nick Saban, you know, drama. Haven't heard anything from any other college coaches, and I think that's a very, very strategic move. Do you think we will hear anything from them anytime soon?
Are you saying in regards to what he's saying about A&M or talking about Nick Saban?
What he's saying about A&M.
Yeah, I think Nick Saban is a rat. I mean, I don't think you're going to hear anything from other college coaches. No one's going to jump in. I mean, Kirby Smart likes Nick Saban, from what I can tell. Respects him. I don't think you're going to see Kirby Smart jump into this and say, you know, he's right. Jimbo Fisher is cheap, and he's doing this, this, and this. I mean, it's an honor amongst thieves that you don't call out a program specifically unless you have the proof. And I think Saban's alone on an island on this one. He doesn't apologize often. The fact that he came out the next day and said, I should not have named anyone specifically, tells you he was sorry about it, tells you that he's in the wrong, and I really don't think we're going to see anyone else talking about it. I think this is a grabs popcorn moment across college football. I think everyone is sitting around and enjoying this. You know, we had Clark Lee in studio today from Vanderbilt, and this was after supposedly Greg Sankey put out a gag order to SEC coaches saying don't do interviews because they're going to ask you about Saban and Fisher, and we don't want you talking about it. Well, what we found out was that was really just directed at Lane Kiffin, who was going to do an interview with Dan Patrick, and Dan Patrick reported that he couldn't do it because Greg Sankey said no one could do interviews because Clark Lee came on with us after the fact, and we asked him about it, and he didn't really say anything about either one of them and redirected the question. So a long way to answer the question, Caroline, in saying that, no, I don't think you're going to hear much from any other coach about any of this. Unless maybe, you know, Coach Prime, Deion Sanders, responds more to the allegation outside of just on Twitter.
Oh, well, I mean, grab your popcorn for that one, too. But, yeah, I'm with you. I think part of it is, too, I think every other college football coach is just as guilty as anything else that Jimbo is accusing Nick Saban of doing. So I think they're all staying pretty hush-hush and letting them hash out their own stuff publicly and just kind of sitting back and letting them do their thing.
I love it, though.
I'm so here for it.
SEC Media Days is going to be awesome.
I am so here for it.
Because we're not going to forget about this.
Absolutely not. We'll never forget about this. But coming up next, Chad Withrow sticks with us. We had Titans rookie minicamp, Treylon Burks' early exit from his first practice. Derrick Henry's contract has been a topic of discussion. I want to get Chad's thoughts on all of that coming up next. This is Stillman & Company, Caroline Fenton, Chase McCabe. Chad Withrow is with us. We're live on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Stillman & Company, Caroline Fenton, Chase McCabe. Outkick 360's Chad Withrow joins us now. Chad, Treylon Burks, of course, the Titans' first-round pick, left his first practice at rookie minicamp early. He was seen with an ice pack on his neck, he had an inhaler. He was obviously struggling at his first practice. Leaves early. Now, there has been so much fallout ever since then. We had Trevor Maddich on the show earlier this week. He said that he was disgusted hearing that Treylon Burks left his first practice early. We've heard from other people saying it's really not that big of a deal. It's May. Your thoughts on Treylon Burks' early exit from his first practice?
I love how old school your guy is that you have on every week. Because I tend to, as I get older, feel like I feel more like him about most things. I won't say that I was disgusted by it, but I mean, it's also completely reasonable just to say what it was. He's out of shape. I mean, it doesn't mean the guy can't go on and have a Hall of Fame career. Doesn't mean that he can't have a great rookie year for the Titans. Doesn't mean he doesn't come back in training camp and he's in shape and he's great in training camp. But the facts are the facts. He showed up and he got winded after a couple drills and had to get an inhaler and an ice pack to just admit and say that. But also, I'm not someone that's going to say, well, because he's out of shape, this is a sign that he doesn't have work ethic and he's never going to be a good player for the Titans. I don't buy that either. I just do find it odd that soon after the draft, someone can get that out of shape, that they show back up for football work, and they're doing drills, and that quickly they're out of commission in their first practice. You know, and I heard from other people that, well, maybe he was having a panic attack or an anxiety attack, and I'm thinking that is far worse if the guy's having a panic attack surrounded by other rookies when he's the first-round pick as the rookie. What would he be nervous about in that setting? He's not even around the vets yet in practice if your first round pick is having a panic attack about that, imagine when they're playing the Packers on Thursday Night Football in Lambeau Field. I didn't buy that either. I mean, the guy's played in big time games and atmospheres at Arkansas. So again, he was out of shape. It's a bad look. Does it mean that he's going to be bad? No, he could have a great career, but facts are facts. He showed up out of shape and he was winded way too quickly.
And Mike Vrabel was asked about Treylon Burks after that practice, and Mike Vrabel mentioned, we need our guys here. We need our guys getting in shape here. Well, I didn't think that was necessarily a jab or, a testament to Treylon Burks, because Treylon Burks couldn't practice at the Titans facility before that day. I think it was more so a message to some of the other rookies, one, and also to his players that weren't there in the weight room. I've heard some of the things that Mike Vrabel has said over the past week or so, and I think that he is just irate at his team. But my question is, why? Chad, do you think that he is mad at the team just based on things that we've heard from Mike Vrabel this week? And if so, why?
I think Mike Vrabel is taking mental receipts of everyone who hasn't been there in organized team activities. This is like junior high and high school sports even. We would have in high school, I'm not trying to compare my high school basketball to the NFL, but I will anyways. We would have open gym on Tuesdays and Thursday nights during the summer. And, it was voluntary, right? You didn't have to be there. If you're on vacation, somebody had to go. But there was always a coach kind of hanging around to open up the gym to see who was playing pickup on Tuesday and Thursday night. They take mental receipts about who's there putting in any work, who's showing up, who's being around the team, and who's not. And I think Mike Vrabel is as old school as they come from that perspective of showing up and being a teammate and working. So, yes, I mean, I don't know that he's angry with his team, but I think the moment that, things aren't good this season, he is going to be taking mental notes about who's there, who's working, who's not there, who's trying to work out with their own trainer, all of these things. But also, Mike Vrabel is a player's coach, and he understands the game today, and he understands that it's not necessarily like what it was when he played, and certainly not like what it was 15, 20 years before he played. But, yeah, I mean, I think that this frustrates Mike Vrabel, and I think that he's sitting around taking mental notes about who's there, and if things go south, he's going to have a problem with it. It's going to fester and come back.
Chad Withrow is with us, Outkick 360. Now, one of those players who is not there is Derrick Henry. And I don't think that's anything that anyone would kind of look at out of the ordinary. Derrick Henry in the offseason traditionally does his own thing. But Mike Vrabel has called out some of his players. And then an article comes out that the Titans are, quote, open to an extension with Derrick Henry, which doesn't make sense to me coming from the Titan side of things. So you kind of loosely piece some things together. Titans open to extending Derrick Henry, which means Derrick Henry wants an extension, most likely. Derrick Henry isn't there at the facility after Mike Vrabel has kind of called out the players as much as he can under the existing CBA. Do you think that Derrick Henry could potentially be holding out?
Oh, I don't know. I don't see it with Derrick Henry based on the contract that he signed. I love the wording of, the Titans are possibly open to extending the contract. I mean, I could report that about, any team right now and probably be right. They're open to the idea of extending it. I don't think he's going to hold out. I know that Derrick Henry, look, he's never had a problem showing up in shape. Whatever he's doing in the offseason has worked, even when it's away from the Titans, and normally it is away from the Titans. So I don't think when Mike Vrabel is taking these not-so-thinly-veiled shots at his team or players in media appearances, I really don't think it's directed at Derrick Henry. And I also don't think that Derrick Henry is anywhere close to a holdout, especially a year ago, and really his ineffectiveness. I mean, we talk about Ryan Tannehill, but they tried to rush Derrick Henry back, and he tried to rush back for that playoff game, and he was very ineffective in that game. So I think Derrick Henry's got a lot to prove. He wants to show that he's healthy. So I'm going to go with no, there's not going to be any type of holdout with Derrick Henry.
Talking to Chad Withrow, Outkick 360, and listen, the Colts got Matt Ryan, who's going to be their starter this year, but there are reports that they're talking to Nick Foles to reunite him with Frank Reich, to bring him in as the backup, I like that as an insurance policy for them. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I think any familiarity with an offense is good for an insurance policy. I mean, we see this with a starter right now in Atlanta with Marcus Mariota, right? Arthur Smith, their head coach, has history with him. Mariota knows his offense, knows the coach. So that's more of a bridge player to get them to their franchise quarterback and not a long-term solution. But, I mean, Matt Ryan's getting older. If he goes out, you want someone that can plug in and get something done. So, yeah, I really like that as a backup plan. I'm really surprised, Chase, that Baker Mayfield hasn't been viewed as a great backup plan for others. I've been putting this out there with the Giants. You know, you got Daniel Jones, who's in a make-or-break season, who they've not committed to long-term. And I feel like there should be more suitors for Baker Mayfield. But I think a spot like that would be good for him, where if things go south with the starting quarterback, you got a chance not just to play, but to prove that you could be the starter for that team long term. So I'm curious if Baker Mayfield will slot into one of these situations as a really, really good backup option for someone.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And last one for you, Chad. I know you got a big game tonight. How nervous are you to coach the girls' softball game?
Big time.
I'm very nervous.
Sources tell me.
Coach Rich. So, yes, we're in the tournament right now. I'm driving to it right now. And this is a semi. We had the best team in the league all season, okay? And we did the same thing in fall ball. And we got the bye, and we got to the semifinal through the bye, and we lost our first playoff game. So I'm trying to make sure that does not happen tonight. And as the coach, and especially as the pitcher to these 5- and 6-year-old guys, you don't want to be the reason your team loses. So you know when you have a couple bad pitches occasionally. So a little bit nervous that I don't want to be the reason they lose. But more than anything, I just don't want to lose in this round again, because we have been the best team in the league all year long, and it hasn't been that close. So I don't want to repeat what we did a year ago. And Chase, I promise if we get to the championship game, I will have no nerves. I just want to get past this round. And then whatever happens, the championship happens. But I want to get past this round tonight.
I believe in you.
Well, best of luck to you and your softball team tonight, Chad. I know big stakes tonight. A lot on the line.
Matters. Hey, your belief, Chase, matters. I appreciate your wishes of good luck, Caroline, because I don't think we need luck. We just need to play like we have all season, and we're going to be fine. But we're going to start to find out here about 32 minutes from now when this game starts.
I hope they come out there slugging. Coach Withrow, softball coach Withrow, here with us, Outkick 360, Chad Withrow. We appreciate you, Chad. We'll see you next week.
Always fun, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Chad.
Thanks, Chad. Well, coming up next, we're talking Jimbo and Saban. We have a bunch of your phones to get to on that. I want to hear your thoughts, 615-737-1025. Plus, is this whole scenario a good or a bad thing for college football? I want to get Chase's thoughts on that and your thoughts as well. Coming up next is Stillman & Company. We are live on ESPN 102.5, The Game. Jimbo Fisher and Nick Saban in the feud of the college football century. I have to expect. I don't think we're going to get any better than this. But I think my biggest question from here is not just what will come of this, but also, is this a good or a bad thing for college football? Because I've heard both sides of it. I've heard people saying, you know, this is such a bad look for Nick Saban. Nick Saban is the poster child for college football. If he comes out and starts taking shots, then what does that mean for everyone else? It's just going to be jabs and behind-the-back shots everywhere, and then Jimbo coming out and just throwing a press conference to essentially just air Nick Saban's dirty laundry. But I think this is actually a really good thing for college football.
Oh, It's perfect for college football on May 20th when there's nothing going on.
We've talked for over an hour about college football on May 20th, and when would we have ever done that?
And we're sitting here 2 months away from SEC Media Days, and it's got 2 months to bubble and to simmer. And you know,
this is not something that's leading the news cycle anytime soon.
So let's see. Let's see if I can predict, read the tea leaves a little bit. Who do we think speaks first? Do they put Jimbo up first or Nick?
Ooh, I go Jimbo.
I go Jimbo, and then Nick gets to respond.
Because it went Saban, Jimbo,
and they're the
this
same
time.
Day. Because then they got to be in the same
ooh,
building.
They have to be in the same building, and then the reporters are all together.
Yes.
Ooh.
Give me that.
Back to back, where one of them has to wait for the other to finish.
Yeah, that could be it. Well, they spread it out enough that, you know, they're doing other things. But, oh, I think you try and put them on the same day.
I think so, too. But then, also, do you want to spread out the drama? Because you put all the drama in one day. And, of course, there's going to be plenty off-season storylines that come up throughout the summer. But this is going to be the biggest one.
There will be other drama. I mean, because you still got the Lane train that's got to run through. Classic. So he'll
be on a different day.
He will. Like, I got to enjoy last year because I was in his – they do the big room with all the writers, and then they bring you into, like, an electronic media room for a smaller deal. And I was in that with him and asked him a few questions. So, I mean, there still will be drama. But the question, is it good for college football? Is NIL good for college football? Yes, because they needed it. Mm-hmm. Like, it was already happening. So you basically – and it's the right thing to do. And they deserve to get paid for name, image, and likeness. Is the stuff between Saban and Jimbo good? Yeah, I mean, I think it creates more controversy. Mm-hmm. The question is, how far out of hand does the NCAA and the conferences want to let this get? And this is where, once again, it all comes back to one thing, that you got to have some sort of regulations, because you don't. And that's one thing that Saban said from the beginning, that I'm not against this. The kids deserve to get what's theirs, but you got to have some sort of blueprint that we all can go by, because right now they're just doing whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why he's continuing to be mad about it, because there is none of that, and he's seeing teams like A&M and others, and it's going to force him to have to play that game because there's no regulations.
But, and to that I say, and I agree to an extent that there does need to be some sort of at least blanket rules for NIL, because now it's just state to state, and you can do any state can do whatever they want, and it really is truly the Wild West. There are no rules. There's nothing that says you can't pay a recruit $15 million for a single autograph. No one's saying you can't do that. That's pretty outrageous, but, I mean, that's what the ruling was. But for Saban to be so against that he would continuously campaign against it just because he doesn't want to go there, I don't think is necessarily fair. This isn't his fight to fight. I mean, the Supreme Court ruled their ruling. They said that not being able to profit off of name, image, likeness was unconstitutional, period. You cannot have a cap. And regulation, yes, is going to be different from state to state, but I don't know at the federal level, in the grand scheme of things, exactly how much they're going to want to intervene here, because then you're kind of messing up a Supreme Court ruling, and I don't know how dirty they want their hands to get.
Well, I'm not saying that this needs to be on a federal level. I'm saying, how does the NCAA, the sanctioning body, how do they try and control this a little bit? Because right now, mm-hmm. you're having backroom deals that have always existed.
They've always
but
been
they're
there.
Using name, image, and likeness because
they can disguise it.
They can disguise it, but it can be more money.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, okay, you got Bob that owns the pizza joint,
mm-hmm.
but Bob's got a good amount of money, and you want to go get the star defensive lineman.
Who's going to cost you $2
million. Right. And Bob, sister is married to so-and-so that has a ton of money or mm-hmm. whatever. And it there's all this money that's changing hands.
Yeah.
Again, like it always has, but.
But now
I think
we know about it.
Yeah, now we know. Well, we always knew about it, but now we know about it even more. Mm-hmm. And it's almost going to get shadier just because it can get bigger. This is what everybody wanted. I think it is the right thing to an extent, but this kind of falls into the phrase of, well, all the roads to hell are paved with good intentions.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there are good intentions behind it, but what's going to be the effect from it?
But that's the question too, is what can be the effect from it? Because, you know, you say it's, you know, these backdoor shady deals. Well, they're all allowed now, as shady as they might be, as ridiculous as they might seem. You know, I don't know the exact terms of certain NIL deals, but Nico Amalavea, for example, the recruit who just signed with Tennessee for $8 million. I don't know what he's doing to earn $8 million, but I can't imagine that it's $8 million worth of an NIL deal. So, it's shady. But what do you do to stop it? How do you control that? How can you say, no, you can't do that? Is it just because it's a large sum of money? Well, then you're putting a cap on it, which is exactly what you can't do. And I'm with you. Like, I do think that there needs to be some sort of regulation, some sort of just governing body over all of this to make sure that it doesn't continue to bubble and bubble, because we're less than a year away, or less than a year out, rather, from NIL being allowed. And we're already here to the point where it's just snowballed into this almost – like this beast that's impossible to tame. We've opened Pandora's box. You can't put it back in there.
No, it's way open. I mean, it is, and it's snowballing. Now, for the positive of it, you know, college football, I don't think the product was really going to be affected because college football was already pretty good. Maybe you'll get some guys stick around an extra year, but I still think, knowing that, you know, if you're a first-round pick, mm-hmm. your junior year, you're leaving. Where it could help things is college basketball, you know, baseball, mm-hmm. some of these other sports that, you know, especially in college basketball where you have the one and done, that the one and done may decide, you know what, I don't want to go to the G League. I'll make more money staying here at Carolina and play a few more years, and that helps the product of college football. I mean, college basketball. So I think there are positives and negatives to the whole thing here, but hopefully the positives will outweigh the negatives in the long run.
Let's go to your phones. Phone lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. If you have a thought, Nate in Hermitage texts in and says, I don't think this drives Saban out. I'm a Tennessee fan, so I have to hate him on principle, but the man adapts. Remember him crying about no-huddle offenses when that started? He ended up caving and changing how he recruited and coached. He's the GOAT for a reason. And I kind of have to agree, because you asked, is this what drives him out? I do think that NIL might be the most massive change that we've seen in college football.
Yeah.
So maybe this is the straw that breaks the camel back in terms of Nick Saban, because he has gone through so many changes in college football, going from the BCS to the college football playoff model, the transfer portal, the no-huddle offenses, the change from, you know, just the style of play being a very heavy defensive style of play to a very pass-happy style of play. He's gone through and adapted to all these changes in college football, and through all of these changes, he's continued to win championships. So I don't think this is the thing that drives him out, but also, we've never seen a change this massive in college football. So he may get to a point where he's like, look, I'm too old for this, I don't like this, and I don't feel like dealing with it. So maybe this is what drives him to retirement.
Does he keep winning?
I think so.
That's the question. If he keeps winning, he'll stay. Yeah, and that's, you know, if this guy averages a championship every 2 to 3 years, he'll stick around. I think bottom line, that's how he's wired and where he's at. And he will keep having his little contests with people that he has an issue with. And, mm-hmm. you know, I think Chad was right. I think this is more Jimbo than it is Saban. And Saban did come out and apologize and say he shouldn't have, you know, said names, but –
he probably shouldn't have.
He shouldn't have. I think he was wrong, but it was calculated. Like, he did it all on purpose. So, you know, he can come out and apologize, but he did it all on purpose.
Yeah.
And so this is what you have now.
615-737-1025 if you have a thought on that. But coming up next, something we haven't done in quite a while, but now that I have Chase McCabe, sports bettor is extraordinaire with us.
Oh.
We'll hit some Carolines coming up next.
Ooh,
Stillman and Company, we are live on ESPN 102.5 The Game. ESPN 102.5 The Game, and I have something to tell everyone. That's very important. It says you can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every day, presented by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. And you can tune in for Nashville Sounds Baseball tonight at 6:35 p.m. on ESPN 94.9 as the Sounds take on the Louisville Bats, AAA affiliate of the Cincinnati Reds, at First Horizon Park. Sounds Baseball on ESPN 94.9, presented by 312 Pizza, Farm Bureau Health Plans, and Spirited Hive. Now, before we get into our picks of the night, Kevin texts into the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and brings up something that I think a lot of people are thinking, and says, essentially, there's nothing that the NCAA can do in the Supreme Court ruling that they made very clear that the NCAA is not to make any rules or restrict any athlete's ability to make however much money they can make, which is true. They cannot put a cap on NIL. But the NCAA already came out a couple weeks ago and said they wouldn't tolerate collectives. Now, how are they going to enforce it? I don't know. What are they going to do if they do find somebody guilty of being paid by collectives? I don't know. That's the NCAA's dealing. But that's already that the NCAA...
They don't know either.
Yeah, they don't know either, and I don't think they're going to do anything. But it's nice to say. So that's already a way that the NCAA has been able to kind of navigate the Supreme Court's ruling and also try their best at trying to put some sort of regulation on NIL. No, you can't have a cap. No, you can't limit how much a player can make. And no, you can't do any other sort of restrictions. But we've already kind of seen the NCAA kind of intervene here and do what they can. Without further ado, it's time for Caroline's.
Get in on the action. Put the money on the mahogany. What's on tap on the sports books? It's time to break it all down with Caroline's. Here on Stillman & Company.
On ESPN.
102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
Oh, it sounds so good to hear that music.
Love it.
It's been a minute. Well, Chase.
I'm so honored.
You're our guest of honor today on the Stillman & Company featuring Caroline Fenton program. Your first choice for Caroline's tonight. What is your pick of the night if you're prepped and ready?
Oh, you know what? I'm not, so you go
ahead. I'll go ahead. My first pick of the night, Golden State taking on the Dallas Mavericks tonight. Now, Golden State put a whooping on the Dallas Mavericks in game one. 100-something to 80-something. I don't know the specific score, but that'll give you enough that the Golden State Warriors just put an absolute whooping on Dallas in game one. And I think that the Warriors give themselves a 2-0 lead on the series tonight. The Warriors just have way more talent and have way more reliable depth players. You look at Jordan Poole, who had 19 points in game one. You look at Andrew Wiggins, who also had 19 points in game one. That's not a Steph Curry. That's not a Klay Thompson. These are the guys who are lower on the roster who are also able to contribute. I mean, Jordan Poole had 19 points off the bench. So I think that Golden State is so much deeper. The Warriors, I mean, they wiped the floor with Dallas in game one. And I know for certain, not for certain, I have a good feeling that they're going to win tonight. I don't know by how much. The spread here is 6. Best odds are Golden State -6. So I'm going to take the Warriors against the spread. Give me Golden State -6.
I just looked on the FanDuel Sportsbook. It's 6.5 now.
Ooh.
So that line is moving. I agree,
I'm still
though.
Taking -6.
Yeah,
6.5.
No, I would lay it. I think that would... That's a safe bet. I'll tell you one that I like from that game, too, is I lean the under 214.5 in that one because...
These games haven't been extraordinarily high scoring.
No, they haven't. So
for being NBA playoff games.
I like that because, you know, you got to wonder, does Golden State cool down a little bit?
Mm-hmm.
Can Dallas hang? I still think Golden State covers, but give me the under 214.5.
I think that's a good call. Elijah?
Now, here's a fun stat about the number of it being 6.5. It might scare a lot of bettors to be able to take the cushion and take Dallas here. But if you think the Warriors are going to win, go ahead and do -6.5 because out of the last 29 NBA playoff games, 19 have been decided by 10 or more. There have been a lot of blowouts. If a team's winning, they're usually covering in these playoffs.
Which is interesting in a playoff setting. There have been so many blowouts, especially at this point in the season.
There have been a lot, so there's not many right here. But one direction I'm going tonight, Calgary, Edmonton. We had 15 goals in game one. You're not going to get 15 goals tonight, but it's going to be not overtime. We're hitting the over there.
Are you?
Oh!
I'm going to fade you there. I'm fading you there.
I'm doing the under.
Nope. Give me the under.
Give me the under.
I
mean, I'll look at
you.
The Avs-Preds series, for example. Game one, over a hit with flying colors. Game two, it was a 2-1 just shootout. Mm-hmm. So I think the way that I've seen that a lot of these Stanley Cup playoff games have gone, when they zag, high scoring, low scoring.
Where there's a Mike listening. Smith, there's a way. And there's going to be a Mike Smith in net for Edmonton tonight. And I'll take with as good as Markstrom's been. He's been fantastic. He got lit up pretty easily by that Oilers line, which is the best in hockey right now. Draisaitl and McDavid have been out of this world. And if the Oilers are going to win, the Oilers are going to win. They're going to need to score 4 goals. So
yeah, I don't think they're going to win. I like Calgary. Calgary -178 on the money line.
Don't love that.
I think Calgary's the better team.
Another hockey game I'm taking tonight, Carolina, New York. Give me the Canes on the money line. Canes lead the series 1-0. I think they make it 2-0 tonight. So game one in New York outshot Carolina. And despite a very slow start from the Canes, they were still able to find a way to win. They were still able to scratch and claw their way to a dub and to grab that game on home ice. The Rangers were very close to stealing game one, and their goaltending has been very good. And I think Carolina went 0-1 on the power play in game one. I think that their power play unit comes back prepped and ready. And I think also, I mean, Carolina is not a very easy environment to play. I think if they're able to draw enough fouls from the Rangers and they're able to kind of get their power play unit prepped and ready in order to capitalize on that, I think Sebastian Aho has a much better game tonight. And I think the Canes are able to take two on home ice before they bring it back to New York. So give me the Canes on the money line.
And I like
the
that.
Odds are -170. But if you want to take Carolina -1.5, it's +155. I don't know if I'm going to go as far as to say.
Could do a little parlay.
Two goals.
Could parlay Carolina and Calgary if you are the over or under, whichever you think.
Carolines.
Nice.
Yeah, thanks.
That was good.
Thanks. I appreciate
it. Yeah, so I had a funny exchange on that series because I heard Darren and Willie picking it the other day. And Willie said Carolina. Darren said the Rangers. And I walked out the door with him and I just yelled, Darren, you're going to be wrong. I think Carolina. And I saw the Rangers play earlier this year. I think they're a very talented team. But it took everything in their power to get through Pittsburgh. And Carolina's just a much better team.
You know? I think Carolina's a bigger team. And I think New York, I mean, their goaltending has absolutely been outstanding. But I think that the Hurricanes are going to be able to pile it on enough and put enough pressure on that goaltending. I think Carolina wins the series. I don't think it's going to be a sweep by any means. I would say Carolina in six, I think is a fair assumption there.
All right, I'm going to give the people something tonight. Rick, take notes. Sebastian Aho anytime. And in the late game, Johnny Hockey anytime.
Ooh,
parlay those two together.
That's a good one. That is an interesting one.
There you go.
On the Caesar Sportsbook app, Andrei Svechnikov and Zibanejad each score a goal tonight, +850.
Ooh, I like that.
Sprinkle it.
I like that.
I don't like that. I don't mind it at all. Don't mind it at all. That is going to do it for us today. Caroline Fenton, Chase McCabe coming up next. We've got the six with Elijah Campbell. What are we talking tonight, Elijah?
The six.
We're going to be leading off with some of that Preds press conference. I have some thoughts on the direction.
Oh, was there a press conference?
Yeah. Contrary to popular belief, it did exist, and we have evidence that even Caroline was there. But Caroline asked a question that was answered. Sources say, allegedly. But I'm going to break down that. I'm going to talk a little bit about the Jimbo Fisher-Nick Saban feud, which is the one story I've been waiting for forever. And then lastly, we're going to get into Golden State and Dallas because that is going to be on our airwaves after me. So I'll give you all the latest on that game leading up to it.
Well, be sure to stick around. I know Elijah has got some great insight on the Jimbo Saban feud on the Preds press conference. Caroline Fenton, Chase McCabe, Stillman & Company is back at 2 o'clock on Monday.